Welcome to SEC Unfiltered, home of the best SEC content on the internet. The following is brought to you by our friends over at Prize Picks. Go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks is the simplest fantasy game on the market, focused around prop total entries. You pick 2 to 6 players, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks has no sharks, optimizers, or mass multi-entry guys. It's literally just you against the projection. They also allow mixed sport entry. So, for example, you can take the over on LeBron, parlay with the under on Mahomes. They've got college sports, pro sports, literally anything and everything you can think of. They have got it over at Prize Picks. They also have a slick, easy-to-use mobile app, both on the App Store and Google Play. They're rated 4.8 stars in the App Store with rave reviews as well. Guys, so many fans and listeners of SEC Unfiltered have made tons of money with our friends at Prize Picks, and you should as well. So again, go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Be sure to check them out and tell them that Chris from SEC Unfiltered sent you. Let's get it.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Jake, let's get into these Nick Saban comments. I know you guys talked about this on your show, but I thought Nick Saban with his interview with Chris Lowe, you know, obviously really, really interesting. And I think why it's so interesting is many folks are trying to determine why did Nick Saban walk away, right? Is it the current state of college football, the current climate? And I think we all knew, right? But Nick Saban going on record, and I think I heard you saying the quiet part out loud, talking about, I thought it was interesting talking about in the locker room, maybe guys not taking it as hard as they did before. Maybe winning's not the keep the main thing, the main thing. Winning's not really the main thing for a lot of guys anymore. Your thoughts on what Nick Saban had to say to Chris Lowe, and I guess none of it was really all that surprising. It was just interesting to see it go from his voice to paper, if you will, and see those words that he had to say.
Well, yeah, you know, a lot of coaches have been saying this. It's just Nick Saban's words carry way more weight. And again, you kind of see who is the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain of why he left. We know we heard health rumors about, you know, something wrong with his wife. Like, is it, but most of us, if you had kind of followed the bouncing balls of, you know, Nick Saban, the kind of the twilight of his coaching career, you could call it, especially now, there were obvious complaints. But look, Nick Saban's been complaining about college football for a while. I mean, the hurry up, no huddle offense, it's things like that. And at some point he's always adjusted. That to me is why he was able to not only dominate, but dominate for a long time. It's because he was willing to be malleable even when he was at the top. You know, some guys get to the top and they get so stuck in their ways, like, I don't know, Dabo Sweeney, that they can't adjust and they don't win for long periods of time. That's one of the reasons why I believe that Kirby Smart could actually put together something similar, not exactly what Nick Saban did. But look, he said the truth. And I thought he put it very, you know, plainly. And I appreciate that. I thought it was very transparent. Look, college football coaches have lost leverage. That's what they've lost. Because you had the leverage of, hey, you want to make money. I get it. I want to make money. money is the motivation, especially when you come from a socioeconomic background like most of these kids come from. Not everybody, but a lot of them. But we all want to make money. But how would you make money? Yeah, people were paying high school players out of high school. That's been happening. But we aren't seeing the negotiation leverage that we see now. Now the old motivation for money used to be going to the NFL. I mean, that's the best pitch Alabama had. Nick Saban will tell you that. Listen, we get you to the NFL, we're going to get you that long money, that Gucci man money, that put it in the machine because I can't count it all by hand money, but you've got to earn it. You go through this system, you get the reward. Well, now you're getting the reward before you even have to go to the NFL. Hell, there's guys that are going to be like Caitlin Clark and have to take a pay cut to play professional football. You look at somebody like Dylan Gabriel. He's making more money now than he's ever going to make in the NFL, and I don't blame him for trying to play for as long as possible. But when you lose leverage, you lose control. Nick Saban's greatest power was he controlled most of the variables, all the variables that you can control as a head coach. Therefore, you can control the result more. Not that you can control the result fully. You never can. But you can get as close as humanly possible, structurally. Right now, it's like you talked about. I'm having to talk guys into coming back and having to promise playing time. I never had to do that before. You either earned your spot or you didn't. And through earning your spot, that's how we built our culture. That's how we built our depth chart. Well, now when you can leave and go whenever, basically, wherever, with no penalty, the coaches lose the leverage. We always hear, and not to be long-winded, Chris, but this is a long-winded answer. It's a long-winded explanation. We hear all the time, why are relationships between coaches and players different in the NFL? Well, to be honest with you, you're both really in business together, right? And the players are making as much or more than the coaches. We're getting to a point now where the players are making so much money, there's not a whole lot of yelling that can go on at practice. Nick Saban talks about guys, acting like clowns after a loss. Well, that would never happen in the old culture that Nick Saban had, because at the end of the day, I'm going to run your ass off. I'm going to run your ass until you figure it out. Now, you raise your voice at somebody, they call their mom calls their agent, and they hop in the transfer portal for probably more money than they were making. So, again, you lose control of variables. And when you lose control of variables, it makes it harder to mold the clay to get the result that you want. And I think Nick Saban, for lack of a better term, and excuse my language, was just tired of dealing with the bullshit. I mean, it's just the truth.
Jake, I know you never take it off, but put your coaching hat on for a second, because you mentioned molding the clay. How would you mold the clay, right? Okay, I mean, if you can't coach a kid the way you want, and I don't know if you coached that way, but I mean, if you can't coach a kid hard, which I feel like, you know, I would say, you know, that great teams are results of hard coaching, productive coaching. Each guy is different. But I mean, what would you do? Like you mentioned, the leverage is gone. If you come down on a kid, he may hit the portal. Like, but what do you do as a coach? Because you have to be yourself and you have to coach how you want to coach. Yeah. So like, what would you do?
Well, the way I did it was, number one, I was always myself. I didn't wake up, you know, on Tuesday mornings and say, you know what, I'm gonna yell a lot today. Or, you know what, I'm gonna let them get away with stuff today. I'm just gonna be cool today. No, look, the best teams are the ones that police themselves, and that's a lot easier said than done. The way I would handle it, a lot of it goes into the evaluations of the type players that you're signing, right? You've got to sign the right type of guys. I mean, yeah, you can sign the number one class in the history of the Milky Way galaxy, like Texas A&M, but if they're all prima donnas and they don't want to work, then it's not going to work. So I think the evaluation of the mental side, right, of that not the, I'm going to be able to just whip this guy into shape. Just let me get my hands on him. He's got so much talent. We can figure it out. That part is getting even more unattractive because it's harder, right? And that goes back to the leverage argument. But to me, I'm always going to be myself. The main thing was, I'm going to treat everybody the same. Like, I don't care if you're a 5-star. I don't care if you're a 2-star. I don't care if you're making more NIL money than the next guy. I don't care if you're white, you're black, you're Hispanic, you're Asian. I'm going to treat you the same as I treat everybody else, with the same level of respect, the respect that you've earned, the benefit of the doubt maybe sometimes that you've earned. But the minute you go and try and be something that you're not, or you cower down, or you overdo it, right? We see coaches that overdo it. Like, you yell too much, eventually it loses its ability. It loses its power. There goes Coach Crane. He's just yelling again like he always does. So look, there's nuance to it, right? Every person is different. Sometimes I think, you know, people on the outside, we forget we're dealing with human beings. Like, you're dealing not only with human beings, but young human beings. Like you know, guys that are still figuring themselves out that are going to make mistakes, and you have to understand that. But you can't change who you are, or, you know, put on a different face, or become fake, you know, or be like, you know, like I think Stephen A. Smith is like a chameleon. You just talk good about the people that you're in the room with. That doesn't work either. You know, so that's the way I went about it. That's the way I think you still have to go about it.
You know, Jake, when I look at Nick Saban's comments, and I put my fan hat on, because I think, you know, when you do what we do, you operate from a business standpoint a lot more, a content standpoint. You take a lot of the emotion out of it, obviously, for the better. But when I really stop and put my fan hat on, you know, when you see the changes that are happening in college football, and you know, the genie's out of the bottle, per se, the toothpaste out of the tube. I mean, it's like a runaway train right now. I understand how college football is less likable. I really do get it, right? Like, when you think about the college football we grew up with and the value of signing a guy and why National Signing Day was such a big deal, and you knew you were going to have a guy on campus for 3 to 4 to 5 years, and this hometown hero type of feel and the regional type of feel. Like, do you think the people, and I feel like I know what your answer is going to be, but the higher ups, if you will, those in charge, those who have much more power than you and I, do you think they care about that at all? Or is it really just about how much money can we make?
Well, like 99% of other businesses, I mean, it's just like government. Like, you really think the government cares about you? They care about how much money they're going to make.
One of my favorite, not to cut you off, but one of my favorite stand-up moments ever was Cat Williams talking about the government. He says, the government is pimps, because pimps do shit and don't explain nothing to you. That's basically the college football. That's the NCAA.
This always is about money. You've got to get over that fact. But it's just like anything. It's just like, you know, why do most people do what they do? To try and make money. Like, the goal is to be as financially beneficial as possible and let the rest work out. I mean, there's been wars that have started over that. So we have to get past that point. That's not saying that they hate college football, but everybody answers to somebody, right? And that bottom line is important. And when you look at the numbers that college football's, it's amazing. We've heard about the downfall of college football and it's coming. Yet every year it makes more and more money. Wait till they see the number this playoff brings in. It's going to 14. I just hope to God it doesn't go past 16. That's what scares me the most, because it's going to ruin the regular season. But yeah, I mean, it is about money. But what has made college football great, the on-the-field product being as good as it's ever been, that's the biggest point, right? Because with that, you can keep it afloat. But one of the reasons I think college football has been more appealing than the NFL, because it's less corporatist, right? Mm-hmm. It's nobody loves the big company. It's I call it the barbecue joint theory, right? Everybody talks about that hole in the wall barbecue place. You ask them, man, I tell you what, it's not the huge, you know, corporate barbecue place that's in every big city. Like, it's not them. It's that mom and pop, right? It's that hole in the wall right before you get to downtown that you got to stop in, or in, you know, Mena, Arkansas. Man, I tell you what, you know, right before you get out on the highway, you got to stop at Big Jim's, you know, big Nick's barbecue or whatever it is. So, and look, college football's in towns like Tuscaloosa and Gainesville and Columbia and Eugene and Corvallis, not just in Detroit or LA or Dallas, where they have everything. And it's kind of losing that mom and pop vibe in a lot of different areas. And that scares people, because that is one of the, I think the differences, whether it's rules, whether it's structurally, right, between college football and the NFL, that's their strengths. That's why a lot of times, like me, man, I'm from Auburn, Alabama. We didn't have an NFL team. I love football. I watch the NFL. My father played in the NFL. But I think college football is better. Now, somebody that was born, you know, close to the Meadowlands, they probably think professional sports is better. So again, a lot of it's where you're from, but I think the differences are their strengths, and that's what has people worried. But, and I want everybody to vibe with me on this. You're going to watch. We know you're going to watch. Like, especially if your team's doing good. It's amazing. When those teams were 9-0 and 10-0 this past year, I didn't hear a lot about how college football is disappearing. It's amazing how that only gets brought up by teams that are 4-7.
And on that note, Jake, which fans should worry the most about the future of college football? Because to your point, I don't think Georgia fans are all that worried about the future of the sport. No. I don't know that Texas fans or fans of teams that are at the top. You know, it feels like those teams that are kind of hovering in that 6 to 8 win, maybe 5 to 7 win per year mark. Because if you're below that, I don't know that you really care anyways. And if you're middle of the pack, it's making it that much harder, I feel like, to climb to the top. Because I used to say, taking South Carolina, for example, that, and maybe I was completely wrong and misguided in this, but I used to say that I think fans will learn to love 8-4 before they go broke chasing 10-2 or 11-1. But getting to 8-4 isn't easy either. Like, you need to have the wallet just to get there. And if you can't get there, you fall to a 6-6, you fall below that, you fall to a mediocrity where, you know, all due respect to our friends in Nashville, but you're Vandy, right? If you're not making a bowl game ever, and that's okay. So, like, who do you worry about the most? Are there programs out there that you look at future landscape and say, man, like, I'm really concerned about the South Carolinas, the Mississippi States, the Arkansas of the world, et cetera, et cetera?
Look, it's pretty simple. Can you afford the buy-in? Like, you can't sit down at this table and play if you can't afford the buy-in. Look at what Lane Kiffin just said. He's like, I don't love the direction of where college football is going, but damn it, I'm glad to be at Ole Miss because we can afford it. Like, the teams that are in trouble are the places that don't put as much money or make as much money, and the care factor from the fan base isn't maniacal, right? Like Boston College, right? Like a Wake Forest, somebody like that. Like, you better have one of the two. You better be in the SEC and making a ton of money, or have a ton of money, or y'all better care. Y'all better care so much that it works, right? So if you have neither one of those, like, and look, it's for some institutions, it's different with football and basketball. Look at, you know, Villanova doesn't care about football, right? They don't care about Syracuse, really. I know Fran Brown, great hire, excited for him. But gun to their head, they're taking basketball. Like, there's more concrete than grass up there. Are you kidding me? So in the college football world, either you have both the money and the care, or you have the money or the care, or you're not coming to the dance. Like, I'll give you another example. What, Oregon State and Washington State. There's a reason you got left at the dance with Gorlock the Destroyer. Like, y'all were the three that were left. Now, the crazy part is, I think Oregon State's got enough care, the care factor. It's the money part. Washington State, who the hell knows, dog, if we're going to be honest. But at the end of the day, it is going to weed out the people who have the money are the people who care the most, are both, are neither. And that's where we're going. Like, when you see, that's my biggest question, Chris. When people talk about, oh, this group of five, power five split, okay, I'm down with that. I would love to have a 12-team group of five playoff. You'll give me a 12-team power five, a 12-team group of five, and an FCS playoff? Put it in a bucket and pour it all over me. I'm here for it. But with that group of five, who's coming up and who's coming down? Right? Like Boise State. You know? What are they going to do? You got to bring them up, right? You can't let them go down to group of five. So which of those schools, like, does Wazoo go down to group of five? Yeah, Vanderbilt's not going down to group of five because they got the money, because they're grandfathered in the SEC, because we can point and say, we care about school. All right, next. So it's that's the criteria to me. That's, you got to pay to play, dog.
Jake, on that note, I'm sure you heard the comments from Trent Dilfer on the Mac and Cube show with Cole Cube. Like, I don't, did you hear those comments that he made, the UAB coach, talking about the future of college football and the power brokers on the West Coast he had talked about, that, you know, there's going to be the split, like kind of like you're mentioning. Did you hear that quote from him?
Remind me the exact quote, but I think...
Well, I'm paraphrasing. Basically, he just said that, you know, he's got buddies on the West Coast that have bukus of money that are... This is already happening, and it's going to happen sooner rather than later, that we're going to have that split of 50 to 60 teams where it is professional football, and then the rest of it, you can call it G5, you can call it college football, but the split is going to happen. Basically, I just wanted to ask, like, I mean, it sounds like, again, you're mentioning that, but, like, that's going to happen. It's a matter of when, not if.
No, 100%. Again, that's why I'm more looking at who's coming to the party and who's not, right? That's where we're going. And, again, I'm fine with that. I know it's kind of split down the middle with group of five coaches. Like, some group of five coaches want to be able to try and have a team in the, you know, Power Five playoff. Some coaches say, no, I'm at Georgia Southern. We're not winning a national championship if we have to compete against Power Five. So give us a Group of Five playoff and we'll do it like that. It's coming, right? It's, I think a lot of us already resigned to that fact. I mean, there's been so many changes already. Why not? To me, I wish they'd go ahead and pull the Band-Aid off. And here's why. I mean, you've seen the, and it's an awful term, the alliance, you know, because those always work out so well, advisory board between the Big Ten and the SEC, which is basically ESPN versus Fox. That's what we're going to, and we'll see what happens with Notre Dame and NBC, because eventually they're going to have to join those one of those two super conferences. It's going to have to happen or nobody's going to schedule them. Because if you have, and Andy Staples and them, and I thought did a good job at On Three with this, if you're going to have two conferences that have 24 teams apiece in them, right? 24 big dogs in, say, the SEC, 24 big dogs in the Big Ten. The more teams you add to a conference, just like we see with the SEC saying they are going to go to a 9-game in-conference schedule, the more in-conference games you have to have. Now, I don't want them to cut down the regular season at all. But if you can give me 12 regular season games where it's just in-conference between all those powerful teams, now all we have is great games, right? Now it's not just the Chick-fil-A kickoff or the you know, Golden Mike's car wash bowl at the beginning where Georgia plays Oregon or something like that. Now it's just, look, you got 12 rounds. They're all pretty much against big dogs. You know, we'll have the bye weeks and that's great to get ready for the playoff. Then you talk about a 9-3 really mattering. I'm fine with that. But at some point we need to go ahead and do it. I don't want the slow trickle, right? I don't want the slow trickle of, well, we're just going to pick off this team and pick off that team. If we're going to split it, let's go ahead and split it. So that's where I'm at on it.
And Jake, you mentioned, but what's crazy to think is that we have not even gone through a single season, not a single week of a 12-team playoff format, and yet there's already talks of 14 or 16. I mean, do you think we get to a point where just everybody gets in? I mean, is it going to be 32? Is it going to be 64 like college basketball? I mean,
they're trying to expand the college basketball, and Chris,
which is crazy. That's
68 teams in that thing.
That's crazy.
I mean, if you can't get in that one, it's like the people that complain that they're too fat to get on an airplane. Like, that's your fault. So it's the way I look at it is like this. The money is going to keep going up. Right. So,
and if it's all about money, it'll never stop. See, that's
if
the
it's
problem.
All that's it, well, that's stop. What scares me the most.
Right.
But here's the problem that they're going to run into. All we've heard about for the past, 7 to 10 years, player safety, CTE, all this stuff. You remember all the hoopla when they added those games to the regular season in the NFL? All the backlash they caught for that on top of the new playoff format, right? Like, this isn't baseball, which, by the way, they play way too many games, right? And they play 162 games to let half the league in. That makes a lot of sense. But at some point, they're going to look at it and say, we can't sit here and keep talking about player safety and practice and the amount of hit and all amount they're hitting and stuff like that, or the amount of days you can wear pads, and then add 6 games to the schedule. Like, that's going to be contradictory. They're going to look like idiots. Now, a lot of times people in power don't care that they look like idiots because they're the ones in power. But I think in this, it makes them look like they don't care about the student athlete. That opens you up to lawsuits, right? That's what's scary. So what worries me the most, Chris, is we have this 12-team playoff this year. It goes bonkers. It's great, which we know it will be. They make a boatload of money. They put a 14. They double the already tripled profits. They're like, hey, let's go to 16. Well, now you go to 16. So you can't keep adding games, because now we're talking about 12 regular season games, a conference championship, and 5 games on top of that you've got to win to be able to get there, or 4 games. They're not going to do that. So where are they going to trim the fat from? They're not going to do it from the conference championship game. Hell, that gets you an automatic bid into the tournament. They can't cancel that, right? So where are they going to cut it from? They're going to cut it from the regular season, and you're going to see the regular season start to devalue in college football. That's when we're in trouble. That's when the problems start. And you know what excuse they'll use, Chris? They'll say, well, we're going to go from 12 regular season games down to 11 regular season games because we've done that before. Really, that was the way it always was. 11 regular season games. We just added that 12th regular season game. But now that we've added all these playoff games, we don't need the 12th one. We'll keep the conference championship. That'll be the 12th game, and then we'll just do this 16-team playoff. That's what worries me. It's going to start eating into the regular season. Then what happens when that works and they triple the already triple profits after the 16-team tournament and say, man, can you imagine if we had 24 in here, how much money we'd make? We'd only have to play. Hell, we only played, what, 10 regular season games during COVID? They were fine with that. Just keep feeding them the BS. Manja, 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 manja. It's like James Franco from The Interview. That's what worries me.